Welcome to In Other News Live on Stage,
bringing you news, views, and music from the youth's perspective.
Things we care about straight from our mouths.
In Other News is a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute. I'm Madison Dooley.
And I'm Daisy Carter. Rather than our normal radio programming, today our show is going to be a little different. It will feature audio, video segments, interviews, skits, stories, and music all live.
As Cornelius said a moment ago, In Other News has been on the radio for 15 years now. To commemorate this milestone, Atlee reporters have been interviewing former youth producers and staff to talk about the show's formation, how it's evolved over the years, and how it's affected the youth who've been a part of it.
So, we're going to start off the show with a little compilation of interviews that we've produced over the summer. They include former Atlee producers Max Youngrice, Chloe Coble, Sam Bernese, and Helen Perez, as well as former APME director, Shauna Sheehy.
These interviews were conducted by Quinn White, Cornelius Nelson, Kendrick Whiteman, Daniel DeClose, and Rowan Pickard. Here they are.
I came up with the idea of APME because I was telling stories about teenagers who had been nominated for Spirit of Youth recognition, and doing that through radio storytelling. And when I was finding these young people all across the state of Alaska and asking them to tell me about these great things that they were doing, it was really persuasive to talk to the teens, and it was also really exciting to talk to the teens who were telling me about this great stuff that they were doing.
I went to APME for a long time. Now I'm in Boston, and for the next 6 months, I'll be writing for the Boston Globe.
I'm at Northwestern University. I'm a junior. I'm studying journalism, gender sexuality studies, and film.
I'm graduating next year, and I'm majoring in anthropology.
Well, I've always kind of stuck around the media category, whether it's doing concerts and promoting on media, writing press releases, doing radio ads, that whatnot.
I just had this feeling that it was important for an adult to be telling the stories of these teenagers all over the place who were doing great stuff, but that it'd also be really, really interesting to hear teenagers like these people I was talking to tell their own stories themselves, but also to think about what kinds of journalism stories they would do too if they had an opportunity to think about what they thought should be covered in the world and then get to go out and cover those things and tell those stories.
In high school, I went to a weird high school, Stellar, and I took an ornithology class, study of birds, and our teacher wanted us to learn about she wanted us to like put together little audio presentations about birds and using bird calls, and then we talk about the birds and stuff like that. So Rosie came into my class to teach us how to do that, and she talked a little bit about APME, and I thought it was interesting, so I got involved.
Sophomore year of high school, I had a friend who was doing stuff here, and I walked in one day and I was like, oh, they have some cool cameras here, they have some cool audio equipment, kind of seems like fun. And I just started working on the radio station and then eventually started making some movies for APME. Yeah, I had a lot of fun, so I kept doing it.
I joined APME when I was about 12 years old. I was in middle school. My mom really needed me to have a place to go after school. And I was a really spastic ADHD, like bouncing off the walls type of kid. And I was interested in media, so my mom heard about APME and she said, this will be perfect for you. Let's go check it out. And so I met Rosie and Robert, and they were both so nice and the environment was so great that I thought, this is the best program. Why not stick around for a bit?
Before it was APME, it was the Alaska Music Radio Project or something like that. So it wasn't APME until about a few months in. So myself and this woman named Shauna Sheehy, we kind of met through the Spirit of Youth. I was very active in the Spirit of Youth since like eighth grade. And I loved cutting their radio commercials because they still were doing stories about youth at that time, even before APME.
In other news, it was like a training opportunity It was a chance for ATME to engage in the community once monthly in the case of Another News, but through this radio programming. And it was also a solution to, like, where was all this great work going to go?
I'm in journalism because of ATME, and I probably wouldn't have the resume that I have now or the position that I have now if not for ATME.
One thing that was great about ATME being in Alaska was I got to travel around the state a lot with ATME and go teach storytelling and teach video production and radio production in different parts of the state, which was amazing.
I have always really enjoyed the interview process and interviewing people and kind of collecting the stuff for the stories. And I appreciate it now even more because it really takes time to learn how to do that. So I'm glad that I got to do that at ATME.
Hearing my stories put up against adult journalists twice my age and kind of getting the attention and getting such positivity. Also winning like press club awards for, you know, stories and whatnot. That was really empowering when I was a high schooler because, you know, just being a high schooler and especially a high school girl, to be able to kind of go in there and be put up against some of these seasoned journalists and win, that was such a good feeling. And I would have never had that, you know, if ATME wouldn't have come together.
That segment was edited by current ATME producer Rowan Pickard and featured his original music.
Up next, we're going to speak to a former ATME producer. You'll probably recognize her from many of the photos and that compilation that she was a regular contributor of the show from 2005 to 2009. Please welcome to the stage, Tiana Johnson.
Hello, hello.
Hello, thank you for being here. Can you tell us how you first heard about and got involved with ATME?
In 2005, I was both a high schooler and going to college. And sadly, I had to stop being in college because it was a choice between a roof over my head or going to college. So I talked to KCC, and they were full at the time. So like, hey, why don't you go to Alaska Teen Media Institute? And that's where I started my adventures in journalism.
What were some of your favorite memories from Alaska Teen Media Institute?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot. The people that I got to work with were amazing. The stories that I created with others, like with Andrew Karofsky, who danced on 15th and Ingra, my brother, who was working for the Alaska Fighting Championships. I also got to work with Sarah Peterson, who does Family Tree Presents and helps run Coots and do their music there. So it's a grand memory to just work with everybody and meet the people that I got to meet.
How did your time with ATME shape who you are as a person now?
It helped me a lot. Like, I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I wasn't comfortable in my skin before I got there. And I finally found a way to find my voice and to find a way to help others and youths that were going through a lot of negative times and to say, hey, it's okay. And to show that we have a voice, even though it sounds like we don't and people get the wrong idea about teens once in a while, to give us a positive voice and to show, hey, Alaska's more than, you know, drugs, alcohol, and all this stuff, domestic violence. To show that positivity was so heartening. It just, I'll never forget that.
Do you have a favorite segment that the radio show has produced?
There are so many, I can't pick one, but I have to say when we went to Third Coast in Chicago and Max Young Rice beat out people from like top adult radio, TV, everything, it was just, and we're the only teens there, mind you. Like we're talking New York Times top of the line. When his name was called and we're the only teens there, that was just like the highlight of everybody's life. And everybody's like, who's cheering? Who are these kids? So I gotta say, that was the pinnacle of Alaska Teen Media Institute for me.
So we have a radio story from your time at ATME that we'd like to play. This is from May of 2008.
Hello, I'm Ricky Ice Cold Chivers. I'm
the Ice Cold!
Middleweight champ of the AFC, and I'd like to let the mic to my boy here.
Thank you, champion. Hi, my name is Jesus Rivera. That's my brother, the light heavyweight champion Jesus Rivera, with his friend, the middleweight champion Ricky Ice Cold Shivers. The two of them compete at the Alaska Fighting Championships. MMA, or mixed martial arts fighting, is growing fast and is starting to become a popular sport here in Alaska. The objective of this sport is that two combatants go inside a caged ring to fight each other until one of them is unable to defend himself. Surprisingly, no one has ever been killed in this sport.
There's more injuries that occur in basketball than there does in the cage. That's a fact.
It's a visual thing. It looks worse than what it really is. Like, seriously, I don't like getting hit. I'm gonna be real with you. No, man, anybody says that, they full of it. They full of it. Nobody likes to get hit, or they're not very smart, yeah.
The guys talk about how in mixed martial arts, having the right mindset is important.
I really don't have the intention. I'm gonna break his legs, and I'm gonna put him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. People that say that, they full of it. They don't live this sport. There's been many a fights where I could have destroyed cats. Many a fights, and I've held back. And, oh, don't help. One of my boxing mentors was like, you're not going to eat this cat. You're not going to eat him. You're not fighting for food. He's done.
I know my brother's not an animal, but I wonder how people view him and other fighters when they're going to war in the ring.
They start asking questions right off the bat on, why do I do it? Do I like it? Then they want to talk about submissions and holds. And
you guys are crazy.
Yeah, they always say, that's the famous lines. Are you crazy?
Actually, I don't know. It's like intimidation is the first thing right off the bat. It's the first thing. And then I wouldn't say it's like the size up, but pretty much is they look at you. And I hear this a lot. Oh, well, you don't act like a fighter. You don't look like a fighter. And because I'm silly, you know, I play all the time. That's what I always get is the you don't look like a fighter, you don't act like a fighter until they come to the show and it's praise and love after that.
They may be friendly people outside the ring, but inside, it seems like their inner beast comes out to take hold of them.
That's how hard you have to push yourself to that level, to where there's no thought in your mind. It's just pure reaction. He does something, you have a million things that you plan on doing to him, and you pick the first one that comes to your mind, and it's 9 out of 10 is going to be the most effective, unless you know you're both on that same level. Then it's going to be a chess game to who's fastest at reacting.
Sometimes, and I hear crickets, and I turn to my coaches, and I ask them, is it cool? And they just reassure me that I push myself to the best possible limits of my body, and I am more than ready. And yeah, and like he says, when game time, when the first punch flies, it's autopilot. Yes, it is.
Though neither of them have had serious injuries in the ring, they admit that training is brutal.
Training is hard, a lot harder on your body than the actual fight.
Oh, no, training is different. Now I got back problems because of training. My neck's been jacked up because of training. My knees have been tore up because of training. Training beats you down. And we have one of the best professors in the world, some of the best trainers that I can ever vouch for, and they push us past the point. They try to push us, you know, past that point. We don't even feel it. You don't feel it till the next day. Everything starts tightening up. But training, I've gotten worse injuries than fighting. Training is where it's grueling.
All this hard work pays off in the end. Every time I see my brother before a fight, people will be calling out to him, cheering him on. It's like they're celebrities in their own right. And it's not just the victory that's important.
You definitely got to go out there and give a good show. You got to always think about the win, first of all, but at the same time, you're out there entertaining a crowd. You know, you're on a stage performing your skills.
Mm-hmm. It's character. You got to have character. There's a lot of people. This is business. You see, it's a business aspect behind what we do, and if you lose sight of that, you're lost.
When I see my brother or anyone step into the ring, it scares me a little, and I start sweating bullets, but I start cheering him on in a flash. There are many families of combatants who show their concern.
But I have a wife and kid that, you know, that they worry about you know, that more than I do, definitely.
Cause yeah.
I don't think that way, but, you know.
And I get that a lot. My lady and my family worry about me getting injured more than I do. I don't take it into consideration at all.
Instead of worrying about his dad, Ricky's son wishes to follow in his footsteps and become the next generation's champion.
He's already got his own mitts and punching bags, and he's the boom boomer, and he's got his teddy bear down.
It's the little icicle. We call him the icicle.
Yeah, he loves it. But my main thing is to show him that it's just confidence and discipline, and it's not something you use on the street.
With many things lining up for them, Shivers and Rivera focus on dreams of competing in the Ultimate Fighting Championships, the largest mixed martial arts competition in the world. This sport is something they take serious, and entering this kind of competition is really for the brave of heart.
They're looking for somebody that lives this. We're real about this. I'd sleep. At work, I miss, I mess up my duties at my job because I'm dazed thinking about fighting techniques. Oh, things I could do. I'm thinking about fighting. I think, you know what I'm saying? So you have to be real about this. Don't just get in there and we stress this to many people come through the gym and they, I want to fight. I think we'll be the first two to tell you. You got to live this. You have to breathe this. And those people will see that in you.
To learn more about mixed martial arts or the Alaska Fighting Championships, visit them at www.afc.tv or www.myspace.com/AFCMMA. For the Alaska Teen Media Institute, this is Tiana Johnson. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you. Oh, and by the way, no one was harmed during the making of this interview. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. Don't you call this a regular jam. I'm gonna rock this land.
All right, well, can you tell us a little bit of how you came with the piece together, like put it together and stuff?
So, with my brother, I used to train with him a lot, Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I had this crazy idea that maybe I could interview him and see why he did this. And he brought his friend, Ricky Shivers, and they were just acting crazy at me. It was some funny mess. Let me tell you, it took us a while to do the interview because they were cracking jokes so much. And like in the story, you know, they're the nicest people, but when you see them fight, it's insane. Like when my brother lost, I kid you not, I jumped over the guardrails because it was a brutal match. He was fighting for his title. And I'm really happy that I got to talk to him about why he did what he did.
So we've heard that you are a wrestler. Would you like to tell us about that?
So right when I was leaving Alaska Teen Media Institute, I found out about Alaska Professional Wrestling, which is like WWE. And so my dad is a former boxer. My brother's a fighter. My boyfriend of 6 years, we met through wrestling. It was love at first body slam. And I was like, hey, I love this. I've loved it since I was 3. I want to get in here. And so for the last 7 years, I've been training and wrestling just like mixed martial arts. A lot of people say it's fake, but when you go in there, there are injuries. I mean, I've had my ankle rolled and still continue to match. I've seen people crack ribs. I've seen a lot of stuff, but like they say, it takes heart and it takes a lot. And it's not just me, but it's others. Like, it's also intergender. So I could get in there with a guy twice my size and have to wrestle him. There's women twice less than me that have gotten in the ring with men. And it's exhilarating. And it just empowers you so much. And I feel like I got my dad, my boyfriend, and my brother just like, you're crazy. Well, you do the same thing, so life goes on.
That's so cool. Going back to the story that we heard with you and your brother, what does listening to that make you think?
First of all, it reminded me of MySpace. I still remember being on MySpace. Now we got Facebook. Just to remember the times being in Alaska Teen Media Institute, being able to interview him, being able to learn, it's so nostalgic. Like, I'm trying to hold back tears because it brought me back from my 30-year-old self, back to my teenage self, talking to him and laughing and cracking jokes. So I have to thank Alaska Teen Media Institute for playing that, because it's been a long time since I heard that, and it just brings back memories.
So what advice would you give to youth producers involved with or interested in getting involved with ATME?
I would say go for it. I mean, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. For kids, teens, adults, to hear these voices is worth it. Don't be silent. If you see something positive and beautiful in your community, have your voice heard, because there's so much negativity in the world and so many of these beautiful stories coming out there, it just sheds light into the darkness. So I encourage teens to please have your voices heard. We need more of it. We can't be suffering anymore with just silence.
That's so true. And you have an event tonight right after the show. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Unfortunately, it's not for teens. It's at the Willow Walk. It's called Nightmare on Slam Street. It's a wrestling event, a Halloween wrestling event, and we're going to be in costume. Going to be wrestling. Sadly, it's 21 and over. But we also do all ages shows around Alaska. We have done Fortnite State Brewing Company. We have done the State Fair in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hopefully, we will keep continuing. And we have people from all over the world, different wrestlers from all over the world that want to come here to Alaska. This is going to be a big event. And if you guys are interested in just learning about us, you can go to 49th State Wrestling or No Strings Attached Wrestling, NSA Wrestling.
No MySpace tags?
No MySpace tags.
So thank you so much for your time. And now we're going to go to a commercial break.
Thank you.
This program is sponsored by Garmin Boja. Garmin Boja, Garmin Boja. Say it 5 times fast or don't. We don't care unless you start a company with us. Want to start a company? Garmin Boja. Want to be able to do anything you want under the protection of popularity? Garmin Boja. Do you want to keep people who have never seen the light before and under your reign will never see the light again in the workroom? Garmin Boja.
What is this?
Garmin Boja is a nonprofit organization that starts companies using a recently discovered chemical that we dubbed Positivity Central Delta, or PCD. Over the process of several years of research, we found that PCD does not just work as a chemical, but also as an essential oil that we give any and all interested customers. Once sprayed or injected, PCD works as a true serum, giving us your idea in exchange for your motivation to work with us.
Before I was contacted by Garmin Boja, I had no idea that I'd work as a fish-themed orthodontist. But now here I am. Thanks to Garmin Boja, I constantly motivate / freak people out over my baker's dozen of dolphin pictures in the waiting room. Never rest, Garmin Boja.
Garmin Boja, available at any nearby truck stop. Contact your doctor if you are known to have heart disease before consulting Garmin Boja. Side effects include having celiac disease and obsessing over bread and Oprah Winfrey.
All right, so now for the hot new game everyone's talking about. Matmajibs. So, many of you are familiar with Mad Libs. Well, this is Atme's version. Get it? Matmajibs? Matme? Never mind. We thought it was funny. So, I'll need some help from the audience. So, I'm going to tell you what kind of words we need, then you're going to blur out an answer. At least that's what I think you're supposed to do. And then later on the show, we'll be reading the results for how Atme started. Starting off, we are going to need a noun.
That's a person, place, or thing.
Library. Thank you. Next, we are going to need a skill.
So, yeah, that goes on for a while, but I think you get the gist of it. We're just gathering words for a fun little game of Matmajibs. So we're just going to skip over the rest of that nonsense and play you the full version from the end of the show.
Thanks, Cornelius. Earlier this year, APNE was contacted by PBS Student Reporting Labs to produce a segment for their series on citizen science.
Part of this project included coming up with the subject and then pitching it to PBS. ATME producers discovered what is known as the LEO Network and created the following short documentary. Enjoy!
Despite being one of the few remaining untouched parts of the United States, residents throughout what is known as the Last Frontier are noticing changes around them. Shishmaref, Alaska resident and environmental coordinator assistant Andrew Kakuna, took action when he noticed unusual changes in the sea ice in early 2018.
You know, normally for our community, we have ice in place that stays all year round, but the last few years it's been changing due to climate change. When we get real strong south winds, that's where creates a problem for our community because the ice separates from the beach and it blows out. And, you know, that's the first time I see open water, you know, for a month of February for our community.
This is where the Local Environmental Observer Network comes in. This organization is a growing social network where concerned residents and local scientists work together to explain unusual occurrences in Alaska's ever-changing ecosystem. Michael Brubaker, the LEO Network founder and project leader, says the service is open to anyone and aims to make documenting these changes easy.
And you set up a profile, post an observation, and then it goes into the system and can be shared with other members. So we can see both what's happening at the community, but in broader areas as well.
The power of the service stems from the number of users. Since the LEO Network was founded in 2012, it has grown to 3,000 users. Desiree Rohl, the co-founder and administrative manager at the LEO Network, says the platform allows people to share their findings and help scientists gain insight into changing trends across the state.
A lot of the people who are making the observations will go on to develop community-based monitoring programs and stuff in their communities. So it's really great to see both Western science and traditional knowledge coming together to really help us understand what's going on.
This tool helps communities like Shishmaref, Alaska document the disappearances of beaches. LEO Network's Michael Brubaker has had the opportunity to film some of this erosion.
Shishmaref. They've had a lot of erosion in the past year. This is June 3rd, 2014. They just moved these racks for hanging bearded seal. Last year they were 60 feet from here all the way out by the four-wheeler.
Other eye-opening observations sent to the LEO Network also caused concern for the future of Alaska's ecosystems.
For example, someone might notice that there's been a die-off of an animal species.
Brubaker's son, Ryan, has helped document this type of event.
I'm standing here in Chekalov Creek. In this creek, every year, my family and I fish for pink salmon. We've got a cabin pretty close to here, and there's not a lot of pink salmon this year that are going to be good to catch. But this year we have no snow, no snow melt, so the fish are coming up, being brought in by the tide, and they're getting up to here, and they're just dying right here, and they're not even spawning, they're not getting up to their normal spawning ground, so they're just getting to the lowest points where there's any water, and they're just dying there.
Brubaker gives examples of other occurrences posted to the site, such as new animals showing up that haven't been there before.
Tropical fish that shows up in someone's salmon net. And that might sound really far-fetched, but it actually happened here in Alaska when the ocean temperatures got really warm.
Michael Opine is a LEO observer and resident of Seladovia, Alaska.
You put it out there, people get to learn about it, and maybe there's somebody out there that knows more than you do about it, so you get that information back.
The LEO Network is now getting submissions and viewership from around the globe. Brubaker sees how the collection of these specific events could lead to something more substantial.
Sometimes when you are talking about these big issues like climate change, it's hard to know where to start. But when you get down to a specific event, that's when people feel like I think can really engage and the direction forward is often very clear.
And now for another quick commercial break.
Wow, I'm a young filmmaker who just sold their soul away to pay for an overpriced college. Now I need a good paying job to get my future in order.
From Snow White to Frozen 2, Disney is constantly revolutionizing our standards on what film is. Wouldn't you like to be a part of the powerhouse in creativity? Come work for Walt Disney Studios, where dreams come true.
No thanks. Your last five movies were either remakes or sequels. I think I'll go work for Marvel.
We own that.
Okay, then. I'll work at the History Channel.
We own that, too.
Wait, you're telling me you own...
Yes, we own history.
What about Lucasfilm?
Yes.
20th Century Fox?
Yes.
Hulu?
Yes.
Fine, I'll just get a job at Denny's.
Actually, we just purchased Denny's.
You got Denny's too? Fine, I'll apply for a job at the Alaska Shaving Cream Emporium.
I hate to break this to you, but we just bought that too.
Ha! No, you didn't. I just made that up.
Oh, we're fully aware of that, but it sounds like such a good idea that we went ahead and opened Alaska Shaving Cream and CBS Emporium up for business. You're hired.
Damn you, Disney!
And now back to another newsletter on stage.
For this next segment, please welcome back to the stage Cornelius Nelson.
All right. So, it's September 5th, I'm at an event called Sound Over Silence. And let me tell you, it's quite the spectacle. Tucked away on 6th Ave at the heart of the city church, there's a lineup of local musicians. And the hill. Jaybird Parkhurst.
I'm not Messiah.
Cannon Fire Orange.
Leave me here to rest by the flowers. I'll be here for the next couple hours. Here was someone new to my body.
Medium Build.
Looking at my phone nearly gave me a panic attack. I think I need to teach myself boundaries.
And Oral Amago.
I'm waiting on the comfort of complications.
I was like, how did you do that? I'm like, all right.
But this event is more than just some show, says organizer and performer Emma Hill.
Well, it's not just a concert. It's really an opportunity for us to talk about mental wellness and what that looks like in our community and the fact that it needs to be talked about more. And we're working really hard to break down the stigma surrounding mental illness and incorporating it into our community. So this show is a show, but it's also surrounding those ideas as well.
A series benefiting mental education. Sound Over Silence is put on by NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And for Emma Hill, this is a passion project that she wanted to see come to fruition.
This event has been something that I've been working on with a few different people to make happen for a while now. I'm a very strong believer in talking more about mental wellness within our community. And so when I reached out to Jason at NAMI and realized there was an opportunity for us to partner up and make a series that could benefit mental health education in our community, I wanted to do everything I could. So I put together this show and I got all these artists to be willing to donate their time because they're amazing.
Emma actually gave me a call out of the blue kind of right after Dunleavy was elected. And
that's Jaybird Parkhurst of the band Termination Dust.
You know, there are two fires in Alaska, and there's news everywhere that was bad, and she was in tears, and was like, I want to give back, I want to do something, and I have no idea what to do. So we brainstormed for a little bit, and, like, she got to the point of feeling a little bit more confident, and, you know, gave Jason a call, and she just wanted to contribute something to, like, our society and our community here, and, I told her I was on board no matter when or where it was.
This event holds personal ties for many of the performers, including Nick Carpenter of the band Medium Build.
Well,
an event to raise money and awareness for mental illness and mental health and talk about suicide and depression. It's incredibly attractive to me because I struggle with mental illness, anxiety, and depression myself. And people don't like to talk about it because it's hard to talk about. So I'm very excited about having this event.
Putting Sound Over Silence together was a community effort, as organizers called it people they knew would want to be involved. Addison Rowland and Zach Morgan of the band Cannon Fire Orange are also part of Satellite Records, which co-hosted the event.
We know Nick and the people who ran it. Also, we all support like mental health awareness and education.
Yeah, we feel it's really important. You know, we're just here to help out, spread awareness.
This event not only sparks interest in the performers, but also in the community.
I read up about it. It sounded like it was going for a good cause, so I wanted to attend.
It was amazing, really heartfelt. Good to see so many people come out for this good cause.
I came out because mental illness is something that affects our community a lot, and on a personal level, I deal with depression and anxiety regularly, and I really appreciate our community being willing to have these conversations and to be vulnerable, and I appreciate our community for that.
The impact of the event isn't lost on the organizers, including Executive Director of NAMI Anchorage, Jason Lassard.
The fact that so many people have come out both to support this and really everybody that's involved, from the folks at the space, the sound booth, the performers, have all donated their time and their talents to this because of how strongly they feel about the mission.
This event's more than just music. The stage was given to another organization that aims to destigmatize mental illness.
A lot of these events have a lot of power because it breaks down stigma, if nothing else, just like in this room. And that's really powerful. And like, we tried to do that with MHATS, with telling stories.
That's Burt Croft, one of the founders of the youth-led coalition Mental Health Advocacy Through Storytelling, commonly known as MHATS. Their approach to mental health awareness is more direct. Their members voice their own experiences with mental health struggles. Two of their members got on stage to share their stories.
Because mental health is so often talked about in music, especially local artists. I think it's a great idea to bring it all together with the intention of talking about and raising money for mental health treatment.
The music, the storytelling, all of it brought the room together.
Definitely feels like everyone's pretty intimate. No one's standing off very much. It's really cool. I like it. Definitely like a community-led event.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like people can just be open here, and it's really important to be that and have a community here. So, yeah, that's awesome.
This event not only sheds light, but brought new voices to the community.
That we're going to hopefully put on more SOS shows, Sound Over Silence, and I just hope that it continues to grow. It's going to continue to help us create educational opportunities within the community around mental health.
I just think we just continue having events, destigmatizing, talking about mental illness at a young age. Like, we're all struggling. Can we just talk about it? Just talk about it. I love it.
For Last Teen Media Institute, I'm your boy, Cornelius Nelson.
Cornelius mentioned, in his story, the youth-led organization MHATS works to bring mental health awareness to the community throughout their members, telling stories of their own struggles. So please welcome to the stage to share their story, MHATS member Natalie Frazier.
Hi. So in my sophomore year of high school, my life became incredibly boring.
And when I say that, I don't mean that I had nothing to do or no one to do it with. I mean that every day I would spend hours lying on my bedroom floor trying to find the motivation to text people or to get dressed or to go about the motions of living. And there wasn't really any one reason why I felt this way. I was looking for reasons. The weather was really, really bad. It rained for the entire straight week we started school. My best friend had just moved to Trombone Boarding School in Michigan. I was doing a lot and not a lot of sleep. But none of that was it. It didn't explain why, when I would sit in choir, all I could think about was how bad I sounded and how everyone in my section must notice and must hate me for it. It didn't explain why, when I talked to my friends, all I could think about was how meaningless their lives were. They would flirt and fight, and I could not bring myself to care. At one of their parties once, I remember asking someone, "Do you think I'm depressed?" They laughed. "Aren't we all?" This went on for months, and then more months, and I found myself planning suicide. Once I started, it was like I couldn't stop. The thought would come in lulling classes when I was bored. It would happen in debate, and I would weigh the pros and cons of different methods. And one night, I was sitting on my bathroom floor, Googling the effects of drinking drain cleaner, when one sentence stopped me cold. "People who drink drain cleaner often experience vocal hemorrhaging, causing them to lose their voices forever." To explain what this means to me, we need to zoom back. I have been the girl to raise her hand first in class ever since I can remember. If there's an awkward silence, I will break it. I'll talk to people in grocery store lines, bathroom sinks, elevators. I've been in choir for 6 years. I still sing in a band with my best friend. I've been doing debate for 4 years, which is basically competitive speaking. I will call someone for 2 hours. I'll hang out with my friends for 48 hours. My voice is everything, everything to me. And in all the time I thought about what it would be like to lose my life, I never thought about what it'd be like to lose my voice. And it was so, so much more real. So I got up off the bathroom floor, and I went to the living room, and I told my parents what had been going through my head. And within weeks, I saw a therapist. One of the things we often gloss over about recovery is that even after I stopped considering suicide, I didn't feel cool or fun or interesting. The thought that haunted me over and over again was, now I just have to live like this. And in those moments, the people who had once told me that my voice was important were now the people who told me that my life was important. My parents made sure I did things on weekends. They would take me hiking. They would make me play with the dog, take her on walks. When I would cry in the shower, my mom would knock on the door. My best friend called me every single Sunday from Michigan. And when I didn't feel like my life was interesting enough to talk about, she would tell me about quintets and quartets and the various music things she was doing. My teachers mentioned that I looked stressed and asked if I wanted just someone to talk to. My choir teacher actively brought up mental health in class. I had the leader of a group I volunteer for text me and say that I seemed stressed and ask if I needed to talk. I have no idea what any of these people knew about what was going on in my life, and I probably never will. But what I do know is how grateful I am that they kept reaching out, even when I honestly wasn't the easiest person to reach out to. And I also know I'm really grateful to have my voice now. I still do choir. I still sing in a band. I still do debate, and it's really cool to be a senior doing that, too. I get to be part of awesome groups that advocate for causes I care about, like mental health. I started MHATS with the idea that everything that I wish I'd heard, there are people out there who are willing to say it. And so now, if I have bad days, I can think about what I discovered on that bathroom floor. I am impossibly hard to shut up.
And now, bring to the stage our next storyteller, Sydney.
That's right.
All right, so Natalie, you're becoming a recurring guest for the show. Do you remember what it was like the first time you got on stage and told your story in front of strangers?
Absolutely terrifying, yeah. I think a lot back to that show just because we did a lot of work to make sure it was really relevant to the people around us. And that involved inviting tons and tons of people from our high school, West, as well as other high schools around Anchorage. And it was incredibly weird to look out into the audience and see my classmates and also know I was going to be telling my classmates some of my most private moments. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah. Well, for me, I was also very, very nervous. I remember for an hour backstage, thinking of all the different exits and all the ways that I could leave the building in case I needed to. There's the back door, through the bathroom window, and even just a bold move of just running through the crowd and going throughout the front exit. But I remember once I was out there, all of the practice and all the work that we did with MHATS really prepared me well to be able to tell my story, even to a group of strangers.
So what's it like telling it now in front of people?
Well, still nauseating, but I feel a lot more prepared. The more practice allows me to be able to tell it with more confidence, but still it's a mental health story, and whenever somebody new is hearing it, it's still a little nerve-wracking because it's a very personal subject.
Yeah, honestly for me, honestly for me, it's important that it remains a little bit scary. I never want to tell my story and have it be completely non-scary because I also want to remember what it's like for anyone who's coming forward and saying maybe to someone for the first time, I'm struggling with this mental health condition, or I haven't felt good about myself for weeks. And so I never really want my story to be something I tell lightly.
I can get behind that. That's how I feel about my stuff with StoryWorks. So do you think it's easier to talk about mental struggles in front of an audience of people that you may or may not know, or is an intimate setting with someone you know and trust more difficult?
I would say that an intimate setting would probably be a lot more difficult for me. Because they're not just looking at you, a person who has dealt with something, telling a story. They're also looking at you and how they know you. And all, maybe they've known you during the time that you were dealing with something and they had never known that previously, and now they're looking back at it in a different way. Whereas if you tell it to a group of strangers, it's that's all you're presenting to them. They don't have, a say in, what it, they're not emotionally connected.
Yeah, I'd echo that as well. I think some of my hardest conversations about mental health, both my own and other people's, have been when I was talking to my friends or family. Because when you care about someone, it's just inherently hard to hear about the things that they're dealing with if they are hard things to hear about. On the other hand, the idea of talking to an audience is also, the thing I think about a lot is high school is full of all of these boxes and these views that we want to have about people. We want to have really simple views about who other teenagers are and who our classmates are. And whenever you're hearing a personal story, it's messing with that, and that can be really hard as well.
So last time we talked, MHATS putting together a show at the Church of Love earlier this year, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then you were part of Sound of Silence just a month ago. What else have you been doing this summer to get your message out here?
Yeah, so we had the opportunity this year we're doing two more MHATS sessions, so a fall session and a spring session. So we're gonna have another show January 24th. But also we've had the opportunity to do a residential MHATS at North Star Behavioral Hospital. And that's meant a lot to me to see. And it's also been an important experience, I think, to have as a facilitator, I think, seeing people who are all along the spectrum of recovery and treatment.
So what, in your opinion, has been the biggest step so far?
I think for me, it was going on the radio for the first time before a big show. Because at the time, when I went on the radio, I had not much practice, but I felt pretty confident with my story, and it was the first time telling it to somebody outside of the group. And I didn't really realize how public it was until afterwards, when I got home and my mom was telling me how people had called her and told me how great I was and how they poured me on the radio. and how they heard me on the radio. And it just became a lot more real, and it became a lot more real for me too about how many people we were reaching, and yeah.
Yeah, for me, the biggest step was like the fifth MHATS meeting where we actually broke out the first drafts of our stories. Because like the early MHATS group was people I knew in my personal life. And I think it was just like, I knew I was showing people a different side of my life, and that was really hard.
With all these public events you've been putting on and partnering with, what kind of responses are you seeing in the community?
Generally positive ones. I think that there are two kinds. Like, I've never actually had anyone say anything negative, which is amazing, and I'm so glad. I hope that continues. And it's either a general, like, I'm really glad you're talking about this. But the second kind of response we get is what is really meaningful to me. And that's people I know who say, like, hey, I know you do MHATS. I know you do this mental health thing. Here's what I'm going through right now. What can I do? Or do you have resources? And I think that the more visible the work we do has become among other teenagers or among the community, the more people are willing to speak out and become aware of their own mental health struggles.
Besides the benefits of sharing your stories, of your struggles publicly, how has having this group of people with a shared interest improved personal mental health?
So I originally joined MHATS just so on the poster that I saw it originally on, it said, improve your public speaking. And I thought, wow, I'm very bad at public speaking. That would be great. And so I joined with the thought of I didn't have any mental health story and I didn't really have anything to offer. But I think everybody has some issues, maybe not mental health illness or anything, but everybody has like some story that they could tell and offer, whether it was about themselves or like about like their experience. And I joined with that, and I was able to tell the group things that I haven't even told my closest friends or my family members. And it just, it made me become a lot more informed and able to like knowledge.
Yeah, building off of that, the statistic we talk about all the time is 1 in 5 people have a diagnosable mental health condition at some point in their lives, and that number is actually a little bit higher for teenagers just because of the stage of life we're in. And so, I mean, it's higher in MHATS too because we're a self-selecting group. And so, like, that's been really cool to find that kind of community and to find spaces to talk about it. Also, it's been amazing for just, like, finding people who really care about this cause and really care about making sure people have access to resources, making sure we live in a kinder community when it comes to being a teenager. And that's nice, too.
So, what's the next step for MHATS?
So obviously we're doing a second MHATS right now, so show in January. I'm just going to keep plugging that, January 24th. We're doing a spring session. We're doing a North Star session. We also have people who were in MHATS last year who have graduated and gone to college, and they're starting like MHATS chapters on campus, which is so exciting for me. And we're also this spring in the legislature, there's two bills we're really focusing on and using our stories to helpfully get those passed. And one is about mental health education being mandated as part of like a middle school curriculum. And the second is creating a 3-digit hotline. So the same way you can dial 911 for a physical emergency, being able to dial some number for a mental health emergency.
So say someone was interested in your program and wanted to get involved or wanted to learn more, well, what would they have to do?
Well, first, they should come to the show on January 24th. and also, we do have a spring session, and if they wanted to get involved with that, they could, most definitely, they could, especially like younger people, we're looking for like a younger crowd right now, I guess. Maybe not seniors in high school who are about to leave so that it can continue going on. But really just whoever, you could probably email us or you could also catch our Facebook page.
Yeah, our Facebook and Instagram is at MHATSAK. In addition, we're working really hard on creating a digital story archive, which means that we would have a website that people can go to and find stories from StoryWorks, from ARIC entries, and from our own recorded stories. And so anyone would be able to have like this giant archive of mental health stories to listen to.
Awesome, thank you. Well, that does it for my questions. Is there anything either one of you would like to add?
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
And they have a show in January.
Yeah, and we have a show January 24th. Yeah. Oh, also take care of yourself.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, that about does it. Thank you for coming up here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, everyone, Matt Majibs, a history of Alaska Teen Media Institute, with editorial contributions from you, the audience.
Testing, testing, nope.
Testing, oh, yes. Okay, and now for a dramatic reading of the history of In Other News. In the early aughts, a group of youth and their library asked the Anchorage community to imagine an organization that provides juggling training for teens and creates a distribution point for teen-related couches in Alaska. They'd call it Alaska Teen M&Ms Institute, or ATME. The program would function as a teen newsroom where youth work as reporters, editors, and musicians. What's the story? The teens are the story. Their lives, often thought to be more green and smooth, their voices need to be heard. Planting seeds in the garden was simple. ATME had the amazing potential to skydive. In November 2003, a team of select youth snorkelers began planning for their first radio show under the direction of mentor Shauna Sheehy. The team launched their full radio show program called In Other News, or ION, in February of 2004. The program ran once every 2 hours during the school year on KSKA 91.1 FM until January 2006. Now it's 3 minutes long and airs live on KNBA 90.3 FM monthly throughout the year. Some kids came in and wanted to do a show, and it was just the coolest thing to have so much jazz coming into the station, KNBA program director Lauren Dixon said. It just rounded out what KNBA should be all about, smoothies. Youth reporters began to produce award-winning pizza that was recognized by Alaska Broadcasters Association, Alaska Press Club, and Youth Journalism International. As one of the longest-running public affairs programs in Anchorage, In Other News has consistently brought the teen perspective to milkshakes in our community. Just as the founders anticipated, ATME Youth soon began to boogie into other areas of welding. Youth now also create short films, write stories for newspapers, design graphics, develop tailpipes, and more. I just want to let you know how much I appreciate what you provide for bagpipes in our community, regardless of the project, West Anchorage High School teacher Jody Norby said. Just the chance to work with pipes and equipment is awesome for them, and the community's benefits in ways which would be hard, even possible, to measure. ATME programs are now facilitated under the direction of Barbara Streisand and members Cody and Ron Swanson. This team has not only led youth to leap in the traditions of our radio program In Other News, but also led youth to create new podcast titled Zoom Room. To keep up with ATME has in store for our Sweet 16 celebration this winter, visit ilovegeckos.com or alaskateenmedia.org or MySpace. Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for our show today. Big thank you to our special guests, Tiana Johnson, Natalie Frazier, and Cindy Bidwell.
Thanks to our contributing ATME producers, Jeremiah Erickson, Cornelius Nelson, Devin Schreckengost, Logan Smith,
Kendrick Whiteman, Rowan Picard, Quinn White, Danielle LeClose, Kaylee Wedges, Zane Payne, Ha'ahale Kanakahula, and Ormid Adeos. In Other News is a production of Alaska Teen Media Institute, which as of 10 minutes ago is evidently owned by Disney.
If you'd like to learn more about our program and what we do, or a teen who wants to get involved, you can see any one of us after the show, or you can go to our website, alaskateenmedia.org or ilovegeckos.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Alaska Teen Media.
Thank you to our live audience for coming out today to see the show, and thank you to all our listeners from all 15 years of In Other News being on the airwaves.
Thank you. Just wait up there.